The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Tom Fairbanks, the man, the legend. He is back with us.
The procrastinator.
It has been over a year since I've been working with Tom. He's been on other shifts, but he's on the other side of the glass. And I'm happy to announce Tom will be with us engineering and producing the Buckmaster radio program Wednesdays and Thursdays. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you, Bill. Happy to be back.
All right. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio on Wednesday, December the 4th. 2019, you're listening to 1030, Tucson's Voice, for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Let's go now on the live line to Ward 6 Democrat City Councilman Steve Kasachek. Councilman, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was really nice. How was yours?
Pretty good, other than that I brought something other than leftovers home with me, like a cold.
Oh, that's a drag. Yeah, some of that stuff's going around.
Yeah, you know, you're with a big group of people at Thanksgiving. Stuff happens. Yesterday was the first meeting launching the Regina Romero mayoral era. How did the meeting go, Steve?
Well, from the perspective of Regina presiding over it, it was fine. I wasn't real thrilled with the outcome of a couple of the agenda items, but that's not her fault. She'll do fine. You know, she'll everybody stepping into a new job, whether it's new occupation or just a different seat around the council table, will have some growing pains, and she'll learn the protocols just as Jonathan had to, just as Bob Walkup had to, and the new council members will learn to kind of get their sea legs also as time goes, and figure things out. It's a new position. It's not this for her. It's not a council member's job. Different kinds of pulls and tugs will be on her from the seats she's in now than what existed when she was in her council office. The same will be true for instance, Lane Santa Cruz. She was once a council aide, a much different position when you're sitting in the chair as the council member. And Nikki Lee is the replacement for Shirley Scott out in Ward 4. And, again, she'll have a learning curve, but they'll get it. They'll get it. And Raheem's going to do a fine job. I'm confident that things will be fine. And, in fact, earlier today I was sending notes out to her, and she and I are in regular communication. And as I say, this will work out well, and she'll grow into the job just as the rest of us have had to.
All right, let's talk about this scooter issue. Steve Kasachek, is it time to put these two e-scooter companies not only on notice that they need to clean up their act, but a notice saying you're through in the city of Tucson?
Well, that was what I tried to achieve yesterday. We have the 4th Avenue Street Fair coming up in about 10 days, and we have by right with our contract with both Bird and Razor, the two companies, the ability to send them a note saying we're terminating the program, and for them to remove their equipment within 5 days. That would get them out of there by the street fair. We have so my message was enough is enough. We had 22 pages worth of complaints that were sent to us, and that's just a small fraction of what I see on a pretty much a daily basis. And one of my big frustrations about the way yesterday's conversation went was that these things are affecting pretty much one ward in the city, and that's Ward 6, and pretty much one part of that ward, and that is the main gate, 4th Avenue, and downtown area. We see people riding on sidewalks all the time. Rarely, if ever, see people with a helmet on. I've seen people riding in the street against traffic on Speedway, riding double. Underage riders all the time, and then when you're done, the cachet that the companies market these things around is that they don't have docking stations, and so you just dump it where you end your ride. And in fact, people are dumping them where they end their ride, and they're in the middle of sidewalks, blocking ADA access, leaning up against doors of businesses. And so my message to the council was, look, we have a right to end this program. It's not working. We had letters from Iron Horse Neighborhood, from West University, from 4th Avenue Merchants Association, and another group that represents both merchants and businesses called Historic 4th Avenue Coalition, all of them saying, let's stop this. The council decided that they wanted to work with the companies for another 30 days, in my opinion, with a naive goal of trying to achieve in the city of Tucson what no other city in the world has been trying to achieve, and that is make these things safe and make them acceptable in a modern urban environment or a closed urban environment. So the city manager will be meeting with them, hopefully starting today, and be talking about things such as enforcement. Right now, it is 100% unfair that the enforcement of these the messes are being taken on by residents and business owners. They're the ones who are calling in the clutter and the unsafe riders. And then the business has the bird or razor. They've got 2 hours to go out and try and abate the thing, abate the complaint. But the initial point of contact is still a resident or a business owner. So they're going to be talking about enforcement. The representatives who were there yesterday said that they have, one of them, Bird, said they have something like 75, they're called chargers, and these are people who are employed by the companies to take these scooters home at night and recharge them and then replace them in the morning. Huh. They said they can have their chargers do enforcement. Well, I have never seen that happen. But I guess if they are going to put 75 people out on the street to chase these things around, let's see how that works. But somebody at the council suggested, well, let's have TPD get involved. Well, we don't have the staff at the TPD to chase these stupid little things around. So that was a non-starter for me. So enforcement was one thing. A couple of the council members said, well, we should educate the public more. I'm sorry. These people are riding these things double into traffic. Don't need education. You know, they need saliva tests for sanity.
It's
just a mess.
30 days. We're going to be back 30 days from now, and we're going to pull the plug. And hopefully, there will not be a major accident where we have a fatality or a serious injury.
When we opened the council meeting yesterday, I was reading some excerpts from a recent New York Times editorial piece, and they were talking about fatalities that have happened literally all over the world and as close to us as San Diego on these things. And it's not always the rider. In a couple of the instances, it was a pedestrian who was struck and killed by a scooter rider on a sidewalk. We have a situation over in Santa Monica where an 88-year-old woman tripped over some of them on a sidewalk and broke her hip and is suing the city of Santa Monica. Well, one of the council members yesterday asked, well, aren't we indemnified, the city? Well, we're indemnified by, you know, in terms of the rider falling and getting hurt, but we're not indemnified from a pedestrian tripping over the mess on a sidewalk. So there are lots of different possible negative outcomes on these things. And I agree with you. I hope we're back in 30 days.
Yeah.
And the council says, okay, enough is enough, and we've given you multiple bites at the apple. In fact, the Department of Transportation 2 weeks ago already had to put Bird on notice that, hey, you guys aren't stepping up to the plate and abating the messes that your product is creating, and they put them on notice of termination already. So we'll see where it goes, but we've got a couple of council members who just think these things are the bee's knees, and they're really cool, and people are using them to cut down the carbon footprint. Bird said yesterday they've had 56,000 rides, and therefore reduced greenhouse gas emissions by some certain amount, under the assumption that all of those rides would otherwise have been driven, you know, people driving in a car. Bill, the average ride on these things is 9 minutes. People are not using these to ride instead of driving their car. And so hopefully We'll get this done in January, but as you just suggested, I think there are significant accidents waiting to happen.
I do, and I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that nothing serious happens. All right, time to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, Councilman. Let me give you a little quiz. For your Christmas, would you prefer pumpkin, apple, blueberry, cherry, or pecan? Those are all Mona's specialties they will be doing for Christmas.
I'm going to go pumpkin because I think that's probably got the least cholesterol of all those.
Okay, let me give you a quick one about the Danish Kringle, Mona's home to the Kringle. Councilman, would you go with the traditional custard, that's their signature piece, cherry, strawberry, blueberry, lemon, apricot, or pecan?
I would take the custard home to my bride, who is right now nursing a broken foot, and I think she would love to have that.
There you go. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Put in your order now for your pies and your rolls for Christmas. They've got tons of Christmas cookies in very convenient little carriers. Bring them into the office. Mona's Danish Bakery, again, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. We'll be right back with Councilman Steve Kasacek right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Take 5 minutes to give us your input on regional transportation matters. The Regional Transportation Authority's 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee prepared draft guiding principles to consider as they prepare to develop the next RTA plan. The survey is available between mid-November and mid-December. To take the survey or to sign up to receive RTA notices, please visit www.rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Speaking of green things, can you imagine raising 25,000 poinsettias They do that year-round. They start the growing process actually right after Christmas, but right now is the time to stop by Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Take care of all of your holiday needs. These are beautiful plants coming in every imaginable color. The 13-acre site is also home to Zocalo, all that great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Check it out. The five shops at Zocalo Village, part of Green Things, greenthingsaz.com or zocalovillage.com. Let's go back now to the live line. Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek, Democrat Ward number 5, with us on the live line. We have the councilman with us at least once a month. And I want to ask you, Councilman, about these well tests that were done just north of the Air National Guard adjoining the Tucson International Airport. Should we as citizens of the community be worried about this?
Not today, but that's an answer with a caveat. I want to answer that. It's a huge issue. I also want to extend a quick note of condolence to a couple of families. One is to the family of Judith Blair, huge supporter of the community of women's basketball.
Yes, indeed.
Passed away last week, and actually was at a women's game a couple of days before she passed away. Judith was a huge supporter of the program and women's sports generally. And the other condolences to Sarah Gasson on the loss of her husband, Tim. Tim
definitely
was the voice of the Arizona Wildcat hockey team, and just a tragic loss for Sarah and her family, and it happened over the weekend. And, you know, we were talking about Mona's Bakery and the holidays coming up, and what a horrible time for people to be suffering these kinds of losses. So I just wanted to throw that out before I got into the piece.
And about Sarah, that it's just so horrible. There was surgery done, and the word was that things had gone well, and then it all went south, and it was really, really horrible. And all of us that love Sarah, and she, of course, as you know, Steve, has been a regular on TV when I was on TV on the Friday show. She's been a regular on our Friday roundtable on radio, and my heart goes out to her. Tim dying at the age of 57, really horrible. It's really horrible.
Yeah, tragic.
Yeah.
PFAS. PFAS is the perfluorinated compounds that were found out by the Air National Guard base. The EPA, and this very conservative EPA, has a health advisory limit of 70 parts per trillion for these chemicals. Out by the Air Guard, they have found wells with contamination levels of over 11,000 parts per trillion. That's 70 versus 11,000. Now, we are not serving well water, groundwater, to the citizens in the city of Tucson right now. We are serving CAP water. And so what we are finding when we do the testing in these wells is not the water that we're serving to the citizens in the city of Tucson. Now, I'd say that with a caveat, a couple of caveats. Number one is, you'll recall last year, there was a multi-state, very intensive negotiation about what was called the drought contingency plan. That drought contingency plan was making preparations for when a drought is declared, a shortage is declared on the Colorado River. It will happen, and this is a desert, and the Colorado River is already oversubscribed in terms of the claims on it versus the amount of water that's available through it, for us through Lake Mead. So there will be a shortage declared, and when that happens, the fallback for us is going to be using our groundwater. Now, we have plenty of groundwater stored. One of the ways that the city is approaching the contamination that we find from this PFAS is to shut down the well. And so we're shutting down wells, and that is not a long-term strategy in terms of dealing with this. So that's one caveat, is that we are going to at some point need the groundwater, and so we can't just simply turn our backs on this problem and hope it goes away. Over 400 military bases throughout the country have stopped using the foam that is causing this pollution. We have already begun litigation against 3M, one of the manufacturers of the foam, and some other companies. But 3M has already settled with the state of Minnesota for $850 million because they recognized their culpability in creating the problem. So we are involved in that litigation. Coming back home again, though, to what we're finding out by the ANG out of Tucson International, the Air Guard has been using the same foam that caused the pollution that we found out by Davis-Monthan and that we found in several wells around town. Again, we're not serving it, but we also can't rely on just shutting wells down and hoping we never need the groundwater. So the second caveat I would say is that there are people who are drilling their own private wells, and if they are using this water, there is a concern. I have a concern that they may be, because it's the same groundwater, same aquifer that we're pumping from, that they may be serving themselves contaminated water. So if you are using a private well, you would be well advised to get it tested for these perfluorinated compounds and see what's in it. There are levels that there was a toxicology study that came out a couple of years ago that said that the health advisory level ought to be something more close to 18 parts per trillion, not 70, certainly not 11,000. So if you're using a private well, you ought to get it tested. And finally, I don't know what they're serving people on base or out at the Air Guard if they have their own private wells on base. And if you're a serviceman or woman, if you're an employee out on base, you might want to check and see what where they're getting their water from, because it's all linked to the same groundwater supply. And we're finding out around military bases, all over the world, but all over the country, this contamination.
Let's talk a little bit here in our remaining minutes about the year. This is kind of our year-end visit with you. How would you characterize 2019 for the city of Tucson? What kind of financial shape are we in right now?
We had our first budget review a couple of weeks ago, and we are, well, let me begin this by saying this. When I started doing this in 2010, 2009, we had the first day I walked into office, we were advised we had a $40 million budget deficit. We have a cash carry forward for fiscal year 2020 of $44 million to the positive. That's an $80 million swing. That doesn't happen by accident. 8 or 10 years ago, you and I were talking about things about cutting services and laying people off and furloughs. Now we have a different situation. It's we have this money. How do we spend these dollars? And it's not as though it's burning a hole in our pocket and we don't have ways to invest it. We still have significant infrastructure needs. We still have to hire police and fire, and we still have to make sure that we're maintaining roads and parks and the park system, even beyond the propositions that the voters passed. So financially, we're doing much, much better than we were. It's a different challenge now. Is how do we manage these dollars in the way that the taxpayers deserve, and not just go on some sort of a spending spree? Again, a few years ago, when Ortega took office, City Manager Mike Ortega, when we hired him, we had a contingency fund for emergencies within the city of $250,000. Well, your radio station's probably got a larger contingency fund than that in case things go wrong over the course of the year. So we've got several million dollars in that now, and we need to keep building it up. Not non-sexy stuff like that, but things that any responsible business owner would be doing that we need to keep doing too.
One of the things that I brought up in our exit interview with the mayor was he's got a whole new team, and now Rahina has a cabinet. Look at all the changes at the top, Steve Kasachek.
One of the things that Mike Ortega deserves high marks for is putting together a really good group of department heads from water and transportation, environmental services, our IT department, our finance people, on and on, housing and development, planning and development. And so we've got a really good group of department heads right now. Rahina is putting a new staff into place, which any incoming mayor would be doing. They have to find a way to work together collaboratively on that 10th floor to make sure that everybody stays in their lane, everybody understands their roles, We have a strong manager form of government, and that's by charter. And so Mike Ortega is responsible for and has the authority to manage his people. We are supposed to set 30,000-foot policy, not micromanage. And so we'll see how it all plays out, but we've got some really good qualified professionals in some important places right now. And I suspect it'll sort itself out over time.
How do you think the holidays are doing downtown? I like the ice skating rink.
Yeah, have you been down there?
Not yet.
On skates?
No.
Well, you're from cold
Chicago,
country.
Sure.
Yeah. So you ought to be pretty proficient on ice skates. When was the last time you were on a pair of skates?
Oh, my gosh. Many, many decades.
Well, you can rent a pair of skates. It's open from, I think, 4 to 10 on Monday through, 7 days a week. It's different hours on Sunday. But you can get yourself a set of skates, get yourself some training wheels so you don't come on them with a broken hip or something next week.
That's all I need.
Yeah, but no, we get some good YouTube of you down there on skates. I think that would probably be fun.
All right, I've got 30 seconds. Number one issue to deal with in 2020 in the city of Tucson will be?
Well, there are two, and we just talked about both of them, making sure our budget solvency continues on the right trajectory and getting our arms around the water security issue. I didn't say it a minute ago, but I think that we ought to be bringing the DOD and the state into our litigation now that we've found contamination out around DM and the Air Guard.
Okay, Steve Kasachek, wish you and yours a lovely holiday season. We'll talk to you in 2020. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Same to you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Steve Kasachek with us on the Buckmaster Show. We're at the mid-break on the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We'll be right back after a break from CBS News and the wonderful partners of the Buckmaster Show that make all of what we do possible each day. Be right back.
Special report. Textbook abuse of power. That's how Harvard constitutional law professor Noah Feldman summed up President Trump's Ukraine pressure campaign to the House Judiciary Committee.
I believe the framers would identify President Trump's conduct as exactly the kind of abuse of office, high crime and misdemeanor that they were worried about, and they would want the House of Representatives to take appropriate action.
Saying he did not vote for President Trump, GW law professor and CBS News legal analyst Jonathan Turley insisted the evidence falls far short of what should be the standard for impeachment.
I don't see proof of a quid pro quo, no matter what my presumptions, assumptions, or bias might be.
Stanford Law School's Pamela Carlin believes the test for impeachment has been met.
One of the key reasons for including the impeachment power was a risk that unscrupulous officials might try to rig the election process.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Pam Coulter.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Once a quarter here on the program, we focus on one of Arizona's most important resources. I think it's the most important. It's water. Without water, where would we be? We'd be in trouble, I'll tell you that. Arizona Water Quarterly, presented by the Central Arizona Project. Your water, your future. Joining me in studio on the Buckmaster Show, Karen Caesar is here, a member of the Central Arizona Water Conservation District Board. You can learn more about CAP at cap-az.com. Karen, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. We're heading into 2020, the Colorado River enters into the, is this the tier zero shortage? Is that what we're coming into?
Yes, it's the first year of the official tier zero shortage.
And remind me what that is all about.
Well, and I've, you know, we've talked about this several times. Hopefully your listeners will remember that the projected elevation of Lake Mead, and that's our measuring stick for whether there is a shortage declaration on the river any year for the next year, is projected to be just shy of 1090 or 10,090 feet above sea level. And for the first time ever, beginning in January, the lower Colorado River Basin will formally implement reductions that we outlined in the drought contingency plan. And I did hear Councilman Steve Kozajic mention that in his piece just before that. The DCP outlined different reductions. And so this year will be the new Tier Zero, which is a new construct developed as part of the DCP. And what that means is we're reducing our Arizona's Colorado River supplies by 192,000 acre feet.
That's a lot. That's quite a bit.
It is a lot, absolutely. And as we know, and we've been preparing for this, a shortage or reduction is always significant and always something to pay attention to. But the good news is the amount of water that we are going to be basically cut this year is largely equivalent to the amount we have already been leaving voluntarily in Lake Mead since 2015. Those things have kept us out of shortage up till now as part of our Lake Mead conservation program. So really, in essence, CAP and our water users have been planning and preparing for this tier zero reductions for the past 5 years. So should not notice really any difference in the operation. The big difference is before we were doing it voluntarily, and this time, because of the DCP, these contributions now are mandatory.
And the drought contingency plan, as we talked about during our visits in 2018 and then this year, it's been a big deal. But what's next?
Yeah, well, it's been a very big deal, and it has really occupied so much of our focus on the CAP Board of Directors, and as our agency has. And the drought contingency plan was built on something that was already in place, which is something we call the 2007 guidelines that also talked about shortage sharing. The DCP and the 2007 guidelines expire at the same time at the end of 2026, which really isn't that far away when you think about what we have to do between now and then. Those 07 guidelines were established through a formal federal process called NEPA, which is the National Environmental Policy Act of 1970. So at a federal level, what we're going to see is a similar process to do what we call reconsultation with the Bureau of Reclamation on those 07 guidelines. Really, it's a renegotiation. And I would just say some of the things that Councilman Kasajic mentioned as far as the structural deficit that we're aware of are, you know, more likely than not to come into play in these renegotiations. So, but here, you know, CAP, one of the things that we've done, and again, following on the heels and the success of the drought contingency plan, our general manager, Ted Cook, along with the director of the Department of Water Resources, Tom Bosatsky, are going around and they're really looking at all the stakeholders and the participants in the DCP plan and getting input on how to go forward as we go to this next big thing. And we're going to build on the success that we had.
So, and again, the measuring stick, Karen Caesar, for a shortage on the river for 2020 is just shy of 1,100 feet. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's just a little shy of 1,100 feet. That determination's made in August for the next year. So we've talked about that. And again, the 24-month study that tracks this comes out every month, but it's the August study that looks to the next year. And even right now, we can look ahead to 2021, and there's a highly, you know, there's a lot of chance that we'll still be in tier zero in 2021 as well. So we won't be experiencing the deeper cuts in a tier one or tier two or tier three shortage that we're trying to avoid.
Sure. And I know one of the areas you've been concentrating on, and I like this very much, it's called the Multi-Species Conservation Program. And this is something the Central Arizona Water Conservation District Board, of which you are a member, has been very much involved in. What is that board, or what is that program, that multi-species conservation program, about?
Well, this is really neat, and you know, some of the CAP staff members who work on it, as well as the board, really refer to this as one of the most rewarding things we get to do. So the Lower Colorado River Multi-Species Conservation Program extends over 400 miles along the river, all the way from Lake Mead to our southernmost border with Mexico, and includes Lakes Mead, Mojave, Havasu, as well as the historic 100-year floodplain along the main stem of the Colorado River. And so it's about 1,000 square miles, more than that, in Arizona, California, and Nevada. And it's a program that is really designed to help create habitat to support multiple species, to conserve multiple species around the Colorado River. And we're really working on protecting 27 animal species, included 8 of those, which are listed federally listed as endangered species.
Wow, that is a lot. So and what does this mean by creating habitats?
Well, like I said, this is really cool for me as a landscape architect, because it's near and dear to my heart. It really involves planting a lot of trees and just taking areas that maybe are currently denuded, not vegetated, and restoring the vegetation to them. We've planted CAP, and the money that we've contributed has planted over 8,000 acres of native cottonwoods, willows, honey mesquites within the floodplain of the Lower Colorado River. We also help stock more than 1 million fish, including endangered razorback suckers and bony-tailed chubs. So this is really hands-on. This is really, like I said, where the rubber meets the road as far as creating habitat and helping endangered species.
And it is a magnet. for birds, reptiles, and fish. I like that very much.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like we call it the field of dreams. Yeah. You know, we build it and they come. You create habitat and through plants and through a habitat, and the animals that want to be in that habitat will find it. They will move in there. As an example, this year, a northern Mexican garter snake, which hadn't been seen in the U.S. since 1904, I had to look at that twice, 1904, reappeared in some of this habitat. So that's really evidence that we're creating something that that the animals are using. Yellow-billed cuckoos, another federally listed species, which is a true snowbird. It comes up here in the winter and then goes down to Mexico and farther south for the summer. Maybe it's the opposite way. That's right. No, they come up anyway. My birds. Now I got my migration confused.
They come
and spend their winters in the nesting area, right? And then they go away, and they're benefiting from this habitat as well.
So it is worth the investment.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely worth the investment. And part of this is it not only is just obviously a very positive thing to do for the environment to create a more diverse ecosystem, but it has practical applications for the CAP, and thus the reason we're involved. Because we're protecting the watershed and the floodplains, we help with the water quality in the Colorado River, and it reduces the turbidity or the murkiness of the water. That's like the suspended dirt and solids in the water. And ultimately, that water flows through the CAP, flows through all of our infrastructure. And by increasing the water quality, by protecting the watershed, we're actually protecting our $4 billion infrastructure.
The CAP runs, what, 336-mile long, the length of the canal. I would think that would be ideal for kind of a CAP trail.
Yeah, absolutely. It's we have the Arizona Trail, which goes north and south, and from our northern border to our southern border. But since this since we started the Colorado River and come all the way here to Tucson, we definitely have the opportunity, and it's something that's starting to take shape, that there would be a trail system along the entire length of this canal. There's more than 30 city, county, and tribal entities that the canal goes through that could be a part in getting this trail constructed.
And CAP trail, would Pima County be involved?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Pima County and Marana are working on a connection to the Tucson's Tangerine Road, and I think construction from that is going to be starting in about a month or so.
Very cool.
In addition, I have to also add that Pinal County recently completed a 10.5-mile Nona trailhead. So there is our first piece in there. And once you get people using trails, there's a lot of positive impetus to continue to extend that trail.
Perfect place to live for outdoor trails,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
Karen Caesar, thank you so much. So much to report on in 2019. We'll look forward to hearing, Karen, from you in 2020. Want to wish you and your lovely family a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you, and to you and your listeners as well.
Thank you very much, Karen. All right, Buckmaster Show continues in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We'll be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
A citizens committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is preparing to develop the next RTA plan. That's why members want your input on a survey of draft guiding principles they prepared. The principles will help guide them as they develop the next 20-year plan, which would be funded by a voter-required extension of the RTA's half-cent excise or sales tax. To take the survey or sign up to receive RTA notices, please visit www.rtamobility.com.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Ever dream of taking a river cruise? Bon Voyage Travel introduces you to Ama Waterways. You'll explore authentic culture and captivating landscapes in luxury and comfort, all on board an award-winning fleet while you travel through incredible cities and villages in Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Picture yourself on the river, indulging in Ama Waterways' locally inspired cuisine paired with complimentary wine with every lunch and dinner. Contact Bon Voyage Travel today to customize your river cruise vacation.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, makes a great getaway. Check out southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of the many places to stay and so many recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, which is only a 3-hour drive from the Tucson area. So if you've got some time off over the holidays, how about a road trip? All right, let's talk a little bit about what's going on over in Vail with us on the live line. J.J. Lamb is the director of the Vail Preservation Society. J.J., are you with us on the live line?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. David Layton is with me in studio. David is the Street Smarts columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. David, how are you?
I'm doing great.
I thought this would be a good opportunity. Your piece in November talked about Colossal Cave, and of course, Colossal Cave is close to Vail. What was the story, David, about the discovery of Colossal Cave?
Well, you know, the Colossal Cave had been used by Native Americans prior to its rediscovery by a man named Solomon Lick. I think it was about late 1870s. But there's a little history that I researched that came up with that isn't well known, and that there was actually a stage station there by 1875. So near the Colossal Cave, there was actually a stage station called the Mountain Springs Stage Stop. There was a new road built from Tucson to a farming community called Tres Alamos, which was on the San Pedro River. So a new road had been built from Tucson to there around 1875, and a new stage stop was created there called the Mountain Springs Ranch Stage Stop. So I did some of the research on that, and eventually they built a hotel there in the late 1870s to add it. So people, when they were going between the two towns or on their way to New Mexico, they could stop there for the night. And it's because of that stage stop that eventually Solomon Lick and a partner ended up taking over the hotel. And as a result of that, Solomon Lick was out there, I think, looking for cattle. And this is a story. And he rediscovered what we now call the Colossal Cave. When he went in there, according to early newspaper accounts, I mean, there was tons of bat guano. It smelled horrible. you know, it was one of those things that was really, really kind of rough. And yeah, they found a bunch of deer heads and
there were like 500 deer antlers.
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
And that's probably that was a newspaper account. It was probably a little bit of an over exaggeration in my opinion.
Probably.
You know, I don't think there's really 500 of them, but I mean there was probably quite a bit. You know, the newspaper recounted that they believed a mountain lion had, you know, taken his prey into there, and the antlers were one of the things that stuck around in there. And you know, it's a very interesting history. Colossal Cave. I mean, there's bank robbers and stuff like that that used it.
JJ, tell me a little bit about the Vail Preservation Society and the big event you've got coming up.
So Vail Preservation Society is kind of a hybrid organization. It's a cross between a historical society and historic preservation. And the work we do really, we research Vail history. We really work hard to engage our residents and the work that we do. So we do that typical research. We have collections, but we also do historic preservation and heritage preservation. So we just recently completed the rehabilitation of a 1915 railroad house that's now in the center of Esmond Station School, and it's a hub for student activities. And a lot of the rehab work was done by Cienega High School students. So they gained really skills that they'll take with them for their lifetime. And then we do heritage preservation. And in that work, we really work to connect people with the place that they live, with its cultural and natural history, and establish traditions that bring people together, that builds a stronger community. And that's what Tis the Season is. So this is the 12th annual Tis the Season, and we bring the community together, and we illuminate the Tree of Lights, and each year there's a different family or person who's honored to turn on the lights that will shine all month for the community of Vail. And this year, that person is Superintendent Calvin Baker. So we're really pleased to honor him this year with that.
Yeah, he's retiring. I think he's the longest serving public school superintendent. So he is retiring. We wish him well.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he's just, you know, an incredible advocate for education and the community, and also loves local history, which is, you know, pretty special.
Tell me about... I was just going to ask David jump in here about the name Vail comes from.
The Vail Brothers.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Correct. Okay. The Vail Brothers, who owned the Empire Ranch.
Uh-huh.
They granted right away to the Southern Pacific Railroad, and then as a response to that, Southern Pacific named a rail station after them. And that's how the town grew from there.
So, J.J. Lamb, where do you trace the history of Vail then to when? What date?
1880, and there was a facilitating train, which means a train that was carrying materials to the end of the line as they were, as the Southern Pacific was building the railroad across Arizona. So on April 24th, 1880, the facilitating train, it was a special train because they were also taking a few passengers, was going to the end of the line at Pantano, which means that Vail was already in place. Vail was a little siding. And the Vails, you know, had an easement agreement with the Southern Pacific, and for which, you know, they received payments. And later on, when that was renegotiated, they were also able to get a building for commerce and corrals. They were really astute business people, the Vails.
Tell me a little bit again here, because we'll be wrapping this up, about the event. When is it again?
Okay, so the event is on December 7th. It's this Saturday, and I want to say it's really made possible by our title sponsor, Lloyd Construction. And the event is from 11 to 5:30, and it is structured so that there's no barrier for any family to come and have a great time. All the kids' activities are free, thanks to Quick Mart and Concord Construction. So there's a Rock and Star Petting Zoo, there's Kids Zone, there's Door Slammers Car Show, there's a great Cornhole Showdown. And David, we've been working with David. Oh, my word, Cornhole. So if you like beanbag toss, that's what it really is. But it gets pretty intense.
David, you're involved with that one.
Yeah, it's a competition. We'll also have some other local celebrities like Big Al from Channel 9, Whitney Clark, Hill Bailey, the DJ, the Pima County Sheriff will show up and participate. So we've got some local celebrities coming in to compete as well as myself. So
that sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and people won't want to miss it. They'll just lots of great fun all day long, and it wraps up at Santa arrives at 5, and the Tree of Lights, Calvin will turn that on at 5:15, and then at 5:30, we're going to end the event with a really special rock hunt. We're partnering with Vail Rocks, so they have been busy painting beautiful rocks for
very good
families to find with their children.
All right, J.J. Lamb, director.
Let me tell you where the event is.
Yeah, okay, real quickly.
It's in between the railroad tracks and Vail on Colossal Cave Road, 13501 East Colossal Cave Road.
Very important information.
Thank you,
J.J. Lamb, director of the Vail Preservation Society. And David Layton. David, will look for your work coming up in the Arizona Daily Star. Your work appears first Monday of each month.
Correct. Yeah, I got the Ronstadt stories coming up in January about the street names that I named in honor of the Ronstadt family.
Very cool. David, have a great holiday season. Thank you very much.
You too.
All right. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster on behalf of David Layton and, of course, Tom Fairbanks with us on the other side of the glass. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening.